David Allen Carmichael, Faith and Freedom Show. I'm going to talk about these issues of the day from a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong, all the crazy kind of stuff. This is what I call preservative talk radio. I'm not a conservative or a liberal. I hate isms. I'm telling you, this is preservative talk radio. I'm going to bring up this thing. Some of you might be waiting, I'm not sure, for this discussion about a tidal wave, a tsunami that's going to affect your life. Of course, I was bringing that up in analogy, or I brought up this earthquake in Chile, 8.8 on the Richter scale that happened last night. There is currently a tsunami warning for those in Hawaii. We've got listeners in Russia. It might even hit Russia someday. So big wave coming your way, whoever you are. But before I do, I got to finish up. There's this Feast of Purim that's going to be starting tonight. And I'm telling the story. And before, in our last episode, the king of the Persian Empire was invited by his queen, Hadassah, or Esther, to a dinner with his favorite cohort, Haman. Haman, unknown to the king, hated Esther's cousin Mordecai. And Haman had the king, unbeknownst to him, sentence Mordecai to the gallows. And while the gallows were being built, Esther, the king, and evil Haman were having dinner, where Esther requested them to another dinner. Again, meanwhile, back at the ranch, in the middle of the night, the king was disturbed, remembered that one day somebody saved his life. He looked in his records. It was this guy, Mordecai. He got advice from Haman, his favorite guy in the empire, and said, Haman, what should I do? What would you suggest for the king if he would like to honor a man? What would be the best way to do it? Haman said, find one of the most noble men in your kingdom to take this man around on the king's horse in the king's robes and say great proclamations, blessing this man that all of the kingdom should bless this man whom the king would like to delight in and bless. And the king says, great idea, Haman. There's this guy Mordecai, hangs out the gate. Go get him and do it. Of course, Haman was humiliated. The little irony, a little divine intervention going on. And this all happened because Esther had the audacity to approach the king uninvited. Ultimately, her goal was to say, King, you've written a proclamation because Haman snuck this thing, this bill, snuck this thing with all these weird attachments and riders and earmarks, and you've signed this thing with your seal, and you're going to kill my cousin Mordecai and all my people, and it's all Haman's fault. Of course, we know the law of the Medes and the Persians does not change. So that's something, if you didn't know a little history about that time frame. Turns out they were going to have to be a little bit creative how this thing would be fixed. So Esther was a little bit afraid. She thought, wait a minute, the king has already sent out a proclamation that I'm going to die if he figures out I'm a Jew. But she went ahead because Mordecai said to her, perhaps you've been made for such a time as this. Eventually there will be a deliver come for the Jews, but you and your family will be dead, sister. Perhaps you've been made for such a time as this. So she went in there and did that. She invited the king to this meal, and then she invited him to another meal. And in the meantime, the king had a dream. And Haman basically set up his own situation where he'd be out blessing and praising on the king's time the man that Haman hated and had the gallows being built for. So Haman had to do it. He marched Mordecai around with the king's robes on, and he's honoring him and blessing it. Now watch this. Here's all these people bowing down, most likely. Most likely. I mean, the problem is you're cruising along here. Most people were there normally bowing down to Haman. And the reason he hated Mordecai is Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him. He says, I honor God. I'm not going to honor you, you silly goose. You're merely a depraved, corrupt, vicious, and degenerate man. Bless your heart. I'm not going to bow down to you. So Haman got mad at Mordecai, wanted to kill him. So now Haman's walking around, and people aren't bowing down to Haman. They're bowing down to Mordecai as Haman's making the proclamation. So there's Mordecai sitting on this thing, getting blessed and praised. After that happened, or that night, they had a little dinner. Haman comes to the king, And the king says, now, again, great meal. This is great. Really, Esther, I really would like to know, what can I do for you? And she says, well, king, I got to tell you something. There's an evil plot against me to kill me and my people. And he says, no way. You're great. You're the queen. You're cute. Who would do such a thing? He said, it's this evil Haman next to you. What? And then Haman's all in a panicky bow, said, oh, please, please, don't king, don't kill me, don't kill me. So it turns out Haman's in trouble. Now, the king's ticked off. He doesn't know what to do because he's his favorite guy here. And he's tricked the king into making this proclamation and this law where the law of the Medes and the Persian does not change. So the king's stuck with his own proclamation that everybody is free to kill the Jews on a certain day. And one of those Jews is the queen. So he marches off. He's got to figure out what to do. Oh, my goodness, what's going on? Well, in the meantime, Haman's in a panic. So he's going to the queen and begging her to, like, cut him some slack. He's like, no, you got to help me. You got to help me. I'll do anything. And so he falls down at her feet. He's actually, like, tugging on her dress. And the king comes back. Of course, he's still in a huff, and he sees Haman attacking his wife. So now he's really ticked off. This really happened, folks. And you got to read the book of Esther. So he's ticked off, and he says, Haman, what are you doing now, man? Now you're going to annihilate my wife here? What's going on here? Well, it turns out, you know, when the king found out that Haman had this plan for Mordecai, the king came up with a plan, and he says, here, I'm going to write a law real quick. Let me speak this. Haman, you and your household are going to the gallows that you have built for Mordecai. How's that? See, there wasn't a proclamation that Mordecai was going to these gallows. This was Haman's plan. So Haman ended up dying on that gallows that he had built. Haman ended up being the one who honored Mordecai, marching him around town and make everybody bow down to him kind of thing. And, of course, part of the irony was that Haman suffered under his own hand. Now, watch what happens. Is the king's in a jam now? What do I do? The law of the Medes and the Persians does not change. So what he did is he came up with another law. He said, okay, I now make another law. Anybody who actually obeys our other law shall have the following thing happen to him. So basically he set out a proclamation that anybody could kill anybody who planned on killing the Jews, and anybody who made an attempt on a Jew would be killed, and then all their possessions would be taken. So in other words, it turned around, and sure enough, some people tried to kill the Jews, and it didn't work out very well for them. All this comes, I'm telling you this story, because I saw in the news today a little reminder that tonight is the Feast of Purim, and that's what it's about. Nobody called at 888-850-1872 to tell us what it was about. So I just told you what it was about, because I've read the book, Esther. It's in the Bible. It's neat stuff. I'm telling you, it's worth reading. If you haven't read it and you think you're educated, oh, you're just misled. It's worth reading. It's Esther. In the Hebrew, her name was Hadassah. Something to think about. When I started this show, I told you about a warning. There's a tsunami in Chile, 8.8 magnitude on the Richter scale earthquake. Actually, you've seen some waves hit up and down the coast of Chile. Not really big, but a little bit bigger on some islands off the coast of Chile. And they expect, and they're forecasting a warning of a tsunami in Hawaii. So I guess it depends on how the waves flow. I mean, this thing could hit some islands way out in the middle of the Pacific. They've warned people about the tsunami, this wave. There's something happening. What I wanted to do is tell you that there's a wave coming your way. I found this article overseas, but it was actually originally from the Wall Street Journal. Now, that's what's really weird. See, I get things that were U.S. news sources published overseas. What's up with that? But I didn't find them here. IMF considers billion-dollar crisis fund. The International Monetary Fund was considering a new multi-billion-dollar lending arrangement it could deploy during crisis, which would offer money to countries, now listen to this, even if they do not ask for it. There's a tsunami heading your way, folks. I've had a few tsunami warnings in the past. Prior to the financial meltdown, I was mentioning on my Faith and Freedom show, is it me or are we in the middle of the biggest financial crisis, global financial crisis in history? Well, I was mentioning that. In fact, I mentioned it to a banker in February of 2008. It all showed up in the news. See, you were distracted by your in-flight entertainment while our plane was in nosedive. You started getting wind of it in September when it was sort of too late. Things were already in the works. In fact, globally, they were reporting a massive crisis in January of 2008 after many reports that they were seeing in failures at the end of the last quarter in 2007. So I'm telling you, there's a tsunami wave heading your way. Under the multi-country credit line, oh, by the way, before I go there, I did find today, actually moments before I went on the air, there is a report that surfaced kind of in the low end of the U.S. news. I found it on one news source that reports the leader of the IMF just had a conference where he was saying there's going to be a new reserve currency to replace the dollar. It's going to be like SDR, which is something data rates. I can't think of what it is, but it's fake money. It's sort of based on a country's ability to generate funding stream, so to speak. You know, what are their human resources, education, what kind of mineral resources they have. They kind of evaluate a country's wealth and its ability to produce, and then they give them a, I can't think what the S stands for. It'll hit me later. But this basically, it's a funny money factor that they're going to use as a new reserve currency. It's not really going to have any tangible hook to it. It's not going to be rooted in tangible things. It's essentially rooted in debt. How much does a country have the ability to essentially extract the labor and wealth out of its people in order to pay the global banking cartel? And so that's essentially what the basis of this new reserve currency is. That was just a little weird. You know, you had to know all those details about it as you read the article. It just mentioned a few words that if you really didn't know what it was talking about, you probably wouldn't even tune into the article. But this thing says, IMF considers billion-dollar crisis fund under the multi-country credit line. On a previous episode here, segment, I said, what do you mean multi-country credit line for somebody who doesn't even ask for this loan? The IMF would, for the first time, make money available to groups of countries that it believed were in danger of financial crisis, that the IMF believes is in a financial crisis rather than individual nations. Now, this is where it gets creepy. So they're not going to lend it to the individual country on the basis of its credit worthiness and its ability and mechanisms and law to put it to enslave its people and its producers. They're going to say, rather than, we're going to give it to a multi-country credit line rather than individual nations, said a senior IMF official, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, and this was reported in a New Zealand news source. The countries would not need to request the assistance. Rather, the IMF would make lines of credit available to those nations. Now, this is where it gets really dangerous. Talk about manipulation. What effect a little group of guys can do in an office to figure out how you can really make a run on a country here. Rather, the IMF would make lines of credit available to those nations whose policies it deemed sound. And nations would not be required to use the money. The fund would declare, listen, the fund of the IMF, little group of guys in an office building, would declare there's a systemic problem in this group of countries, and here's a line of credit for the following countries, said the official. He emphasized that a formal proposal was not expected to be ready before September. Everything happens in September would need to be approved by the IMF's governing board. What are they going to do? They're going to announce that a group of countries on the verge of financial collapse, what is that going to do, an effect going to have on its monetary system and its ability to have any influence on its own issues? We'll be back.